We made this.
Does Liz get a new top?
No, we've seen that before. Never with that skirt.
She probably stops staring before it gets creepy, though.
Too late. You guys are losers.
So, to become an Avenger, are there, like, trials or an interview?
Just don't do anything I would do. And definitely don't do anything I wouldn't do. There's a little gray area in there, and that's where you operate.
Oh.
All right?
That's not a hug. I'm just grabbing the door for you. All right, kid. Good luck out there. I'm feeling rough,
I'm feeling wrong. Listen, I know school sucks.
Peter, you still with us?
Yeah.
I know you want to save the world, but you're not ready yet.
You're the Spider-Man.
No, I'm not. I'm not. This is just a costume. This is
from the ceiling.
Stay close to the ground and stay out of trouble. Forget the flying monster guy. There are people who handle this sort of thing.
I'm sick of him treating me like a kid all the time.
But you are a kid.
This is my chance to prove myself.
Peter, what is going on with you?
I'm really sorry. I'm so busy. I'm slammed.
Don't mess with me, because I will kill you and everybody you love.
And welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast about the Marvel Universe for the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host today, my name is Mark Adams, and in this episode we're going to be discussing the first MCU Spider-Man film, Spider-Man Homecoming. Spider-Man Homecoming was the first Spider-Man focused film in the MCU, but we had met Spider-Man before in Civil War. This was a huge deal that he was in the MCU at the time because the character was still owned by Sony Pictures. The film tells the story of how Spider-Man, or Peter Parker, kind of learns as he goes along, having received a suit as a gift from Tony Stark. And it's a coming of age type situation. We're going to go into that in a little bit more detail in a minute. Joining me to discuss this episode is my guest, Fraser Summers. Hello, Fraser.
Oh, I've just swinged in from New York.
Have you?
With me web swingers, yeah.
With your web slingers or swingers?
A bit of both, yeah.
Of all the people I know, I don't think swinging is your thing.
Yeah, with my webs. I swing with my webs and then I swing them as well.
That wasn't what I was suggesting, and you know it.
You dirty perv.
I know.
But no, yeah, I've swung in on the web shooters. I'm going to have to recharge them, so I'm here for at least a good 45 minutes, so
right,
now
good.
Seems like a good time to be talking about Spider-Man whilst they get all charged up and ready to go.
Hey, oh, let's go! That's a very good quote from the film, we'll talk about that in a minute. But before we get into the discussion about Spider-Man, for people who don't know, there is another very, very good podcast on the We Made This Podcast Network that is hosted by you and me, Fraser. Do you want to tell the people about Right in the Childhood?
Oh, that is that podcast. Yeah, we do a little podcast called Right in the Childhood where we take a little trip down memory lane for one half of us, and for the other half it's a trip into an unknown area of childhood but someone else's.
True.
So basically, we're both sort of millennials, but like
yeah.
Also sort of part of another generation. So you're like Gen X millennial and yeah. Millennial Gen Z.
Yeah.
So we have different, you know, memories of childhood because they were, you know, two different times. And we've got different telly that goes along with that. Some of it is Spider-Man related. We've done a few episodes
we
of
have.
Spidey.
We have.
But yeah, and it's also, you know, it's cool to see your mate's telly from their childhood because it sort of paints a picture of him.
Yeah.
For me, it's, you know, Marvel and Disney obsessed child and still am. And you are Doctor Who obsessed and horror obsessed.
Fair. Both fair. Yeah. I also like Marvel too. I mean, I wouldn't be presenting a Marvel podcast.
That is very true.
But I think we originally thought, as friends, we had huge kind of like crossover in our taste. Mm-hmm. But it probably is just Marvel stuff that's
just
our crossover.
Strictly Marvel.
Maybe not strictly, but
no, there are other stuff as well. And like
doing that podcast has made us realise how different the 15 years age difference we have made our childhood experiences.
Yeah, definitely.
You didn't have tapes, for example. No tapes.
No.
No. Do you know what a tape is?
Yeah, I've seen tape.
You've seen tapes? You ever used a tape?
I've used a VHS tape.
No, I'm talking about cassette tapes.
No, I've got a bald spot on the top of my head from when my sister threw a VHS at the top of my head.
Shall we actually get in and start talking properly rather than
we
tangenting?
Can do as well. I mean, I can relate to that. What I do like about this film is that in this one, it's only Flash that bullies him rather than like in all the other adaptations. Like even like some of the animated stuff, everyone just hates Peter Parker, especially in those Sam Raimi movies.
Mm.
Like everyone just thinks he's like that school bus scene when he's walking around and no one wants to sit next to him. It's like, what has he done? Fucking shat on your chips or whatever. But in this, it's you know, it is that stereotypical school thing of like, there's just one person who's just got out for you. And it is pretty ironic that Flash is one of, you know, Spidey's biggest fans, but is like, Penis Parker!
So
and it's just little things. Like, I wouldn't say he's a full-on bully to the point where it's like, oh, that's a bit too much, but it'd just be like,
he does actively humiliate him at
like
the party.
It's like little name-calling things, and like, it's clearly a jealousy thing, and he'll like hit him in the ass or something.
Mm.
And it's just, you can tell it stems from, like, a bit of jealousy, because in this film, they do show that, like, I like that Flash is smart in this, but Peter's just ever so smarter.
Yeah, it is a nice take on Flash. You and I have read quite a lot of Spider-Man comics, so I think a lot of our discussion would be comparing the source material and how it's been adapted. And I think that the Flash character was very much a product of its time, the 60s, a big, burly jock bully.
Mm.
And that would have probably still worked in this context, but I think the new Flash, this Flash, is quite a thoughtful adaptation of what a bully is and what a bully means in the modern world.
To be honest, like a like the footballing star's not going to really be bothered with the kid in the corner, is he? I mean, there are adaptations like Spectacular Spider-Man's a really good one that shows that like Flash and Spider-Man and Peter Parker were friends when they were younger. That's why there's that connection.
Mm.
But like I prefer the connection in this, I think. I also want to touch on while we're here about like the supporting characters that are in this, because it does feel like a tight-knit group like you would have at a school, and especially an American school, because American schools are massive. There's like thousands and thousands of kids. Mm. So the nerds would sort of hang out together. Freaks and geeks would hang out together. So all the characters that we see, like we see Betty Brant, we see Liz Allen, we see Cindy Moon and all these, they're all hanging together because they're all on the debate team or like all in the same circle. And it makes sense. I do like the little nods as well to like their character's future. Like Betty Brant is like that news anchor on there, and he's going to eventually probably work at the Daily Bugle.
Yeah, I liked that Betty Brant was in it. It was a surprise because she tends to be a character that's ignored in adaptations. Yeah. But what we didn't see was Gwen Stacy at all.
Not yet, no. I reckon they'll do a... Because the movies and TV shows tend to go for, right, we'll introduce either Mary Jane or Gwen at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then introduce the other one later. Like in Sam Raimi's, we get Gwen Stacy in the third movie. In Andrew Garfield ones, apparently we were supposed to be getting Mary Jane in the third movie.
Right.
So in this trilogy, who knows, Gwen Stacy might turn up at some point. You know, who knows? They might leave Gwen Stacy for when they start doing Miles Morales stuff.
Yeah,
because,
true.
You know, Peter's already stolen Miles' best mate in. It's Ned Leeds in here, but really it's Ganke Lee. Ganke Lee's like Miles Morales' best mate.
You feel that that's probably what the inspiration is, because...
Yeah, it's 100%, because they literally took it from... There's a page in the comic where Ganke drops a Lego. I don't know if it is a Death Star, but he definitely drops a Lego figure when he realises that Miles is... So maybe Miles will have a Gwen Stacy thing. And maybe that'd be... But who knows?
The other character conspicuous by their absence, I thought, was Felicia Hardy. If they're going to have Betty Brant, I don't know, I think Felicia's more important than Betty.
I think Felicia might come in his college. Like, we've got this Peter Parker for a while. We might get, like, college years is when we introduce, like, maybe we introduce a Felicia Hardy, we get an Eddie Brock, I think there's time to come for those. And obviously you can't fit all of them in. One they sneakily put in was Cindy Moon, like Silk. And I was like, oh, okay. Like,
I didn't spot that. Like, I've not read Silk.
She's in the debate team and it's like, oh, sneaky little cameo there. Do you like that?
I mean, some of the obscure characters that they've brought in various films across the MCU, I don't know. I think Silk could be a thing that happens eventually.
Might be a Disney Plus or a... Who knows? Mm. I don't know. Maybe
probably not Disney Plus. Maybe Sony would do Sony Plus.
Sony Plus. Now, Sony don't have a streaming service. It's quite scary, actually. Especially with the whole pandemic thing when it was like, you know, when it was looking like things were going back to just streaming. It was like, I want to see No Way Home. I don't want to, like, have to wait and re-record this podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But yeah. I did like as well, one of the things we've got to talk about, Liz Allen. And Adrian Toomes. That little twist. And this is what...
You're all over the place. We're not doing this chronologically at all then, are we? We're just doing it in Fraser order.
I mean, we can do... Yeah, my dyslexic ADHD order. I mean, we can go back... That's fine. We can go back to that if you want, actually. We don't have to talk about that.
Well, should we talk about the choice of the vulture? And the fact that... Hey?
The Birdman.
The Birdman, the Vulture, whatever you want to call him.
Oh, no, I'm just saying because, like, he literally went from Batman to that Birdman movie that he did, and then...
Oh, and now he's the Vulture. Yeah. So he kind of transitioned.
Very clever.
But it's an interesting choice. The Vulture is definitely a Spider-Man villain, but I would say he's kind of second level.
I think that's what they were starting off with, though. Like, there's that iconic... I think I want to say it's one of the first issues. It might be the first issue of Spider-Man holding Vulture. And obviously other adaptations have gone for it. I'm going to keep talking about Spectacular Spider-Man, but that's just because I binged it. And we talked about it recently on Right in the Childhood. But Vulture was the first villain they introduced as well.
True.
And I think it's just like a nod to, like, the comics and just, like, his origin. Because, yeah, you're right, we get, like... We don't really get his main villains. Like, we don't get a Green Goblin, but I like that. We get, like, a Vulture. We get Tinkerer. We get two Shockers.
We get two Shockers, yes.
Two Shockers.
We also get Prowler. Don't forget Prowler.
Well, that's, like, a nod. I think it sets up Prowler, but he hasn't... There's, like, a nod when he's, like... They talk about his suit, and he's like, ooh, that's the only thing that piques his interest. That'll be a later on thing.
Yeah.
But they introduce them, and it sort of just establishes this thing, which I love about Homecoming, is... It's the friendly neighbourhood Spidey.
Yes.
Because I feel like a lot of the MCU is like end of the world stuff. And there is a lot of stuff that could potentially be in this, like if, you know, these weapons get in the wrong hands. But a lot of it is just focusing on the neighbourhood of New York. And, you know, that's how Spidey learns his whole story, is like he faces these lower level villains.
Yeah, but the thing is, to the layman, I mean, you and I both know that the character played by Donald Glover... eventually becomes the Prowler.
Yeah,
that's Aaron a cheeky Davis. Little...
Aaron Davis, yeah. It's also cool that they got Donald Glover to do it, because Donald Glover is the inspiration for Miles Morales. Like, people were talking on age on the internet, like, they literally saw... It's a scene in Community where he's wearing Spider-Man pyjamas, and like, why can't Spider-Man be black? And then, like, Brian Michael Bendis decided to make this whole character based on him and sort of like...
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's cool because in this, he talks about, like, how he's got a nephew. On a deleted scene, he literally calls someone and calls Miles and says, oh, sorry, Miles is going to be late. So it is nice to see. Like, it's a bit upsetting that he has, like, aged himself out of the role of Miles, but I do like that he's in Prowler instead.
Yeah.
And he's also voiced Miles on some animated stuff on Ultimate Spidey.
But you don't need to know that that's the Prowler. That's a nice little Easter egg for people like us. Whereas your layman who isn't that into Spider-Man may not have heard of the Vulture either. They will have heard of Dr. Octopus or Green Goblin.
I was going to say, they only hear about those because you introduce them in movies. So, like, that, I feel like that's your way to do it, is like, oh, people aren't going to know who Vulture is. Well, they will after the movie.
True, but...
And I think that it should never be your focus that, like, oh, the villains need to be, you know, known, because...
Again, I agree.
You're going there for Spidey.
I agree, but what I'm saying is it was brave.
Yeah.
It was a brave choice to have a lesser-known villain.
Yeah.
I think if you asked someone who are the villains in Spider-Man, Vulture would possibly be number 6, 7, 8, 9... You'd probably name the Kingpin before you name the Vulture.
Part of the Sinister Six. Maybe making the Sinister Six. It's interesting as well that Tony Stark is making villains again.
Yes.
Like, he's made most of the MCU's villains.
He really has.
And most of Peter Parker's as well. But we'll go on to Far From Home next time.
We will. Have you ever read the Damage Control comics?
No.
Damage Control were really, really cool in the comics. And there was talk at some point of there being like a TV series show, of these people that tidy up after all the crazy happens.
But then DC did their version of it. It flops like, I don't know what. It flops like a pancake. Is that what you said? Flops like a pancake.
Flop like a pancake. Would you like to know why I read the Damage Control comics?
Go ahead. Oh, Eric Masterson was in it.
Absolutely true. Sick. For anyone who hasn't listened to me on anything, I'm pretty much mentioned Thunderstrike on every Marvel podcast episode I'm ever on. Thunderstrike was a mortal version of Thor that absolutely bombed, and no one liked him except me in the 90s. And
are you still not found another fan yet?
No, I don't find anyone who likes Thunderstrike. If you like Thunderstrike, at me, at MarkAdamsHC on Twitter, and say, I like Thunderstrike too, and make me feel like less of a loser. But yeah, the Damage Control comics were great fun, and they were just like these big, burly boys who cleared stuff up. And I loved that little reference. There's so much deep, deep source material that a throwaway screen of Damage Control on for like, what, 5 seconds is an actual reference to a comic. And I think that's really, really cool that it's completely unnecessary and it doesn't mean that people who don't know who Damage Control are miss anything.
Yeah. It's just another thing they've introduced into the universe.
And it pops me, who quite likes Damage Control.
It's a really cool movie because it introduces some stuff to the MCU and it also brings back some stuff like the alien technology we see again, which is really cool. There's mentions back to Civil War. You know, it's showing that it's part of this universe, but it's also like adding to it. And I think that's why the Sony and Disney deal sort of works. It's like, okay, yeah, we're going to take stuff from your universe, but we're also going to add stuff. Because, like, let's be honest, Spider-Man's got the best rogues gallery of villains and characters in Marvel. Like, the amount of villains and stuff like that, Disney could probably use if they did have Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's even rumours of having Kraven as, like, a Black Panther villain at some point.
Kraven would be wonderful.
Yeah.
He's never really been in any live action stuff, to my knowledge. He's obviously been in cartoons of Spider-Man, but he's never been in any live action
stuff. There's supposed to be like a Kraven movie happening with Sony, but who knows what.
That will be an odd one that he's not the bad guy.
He's the lead. No, I think it'll be like one of those, you know, like villains are leading movies now. You look at Joker and sort of changed the game a bit. But yeah, no, I did like the little references to sort of like Spidey after Civil War and how sort of like his life didn't really change. Like, he wants his life to change because that should, like, you've fought Captain America, you're with Iron Man, things should be going up, and just shows Parker look that it doesn't.
You are a lot like Peter Parker, so I can see why that resonated with you. You aren't perhaps as patient in your 20s as I am now in my 40s. Yeah. You want everything, you want to achieve it, you want to do everything, and you want it now. And I think the whole thing is done really, really well and empathically, but he does get in trouble because he's too ambitious, and I like that.
I think it helps that a younger person playing Spider-Man actually makes him feel younger, and actually, like, the big story points of, you know, Spider-Man being young in the comics resonated well with this. I will say Tom Holland's probably the best at the duality. Like, I think he's the best combination of Peter Parker and Spider-Man. Like, Andrew Garfield's probably the best Spider-Man. Like, he had the quips and everything.
Mm.
He wasn't that great. He was a bit too cool as Peter Parker. Tobey Maguire was perfect as Peter Parker. He's so nerdy and stuff like that. But his quips...
He was, but he was like 35 when he played him.
That's why the Peter Parker bit was a bit weird.
Yeah.
Whereas Tom Holland's just a perfect blend of both, I feel.
I think so.
And also the age helps as well.
Yeah.
It will be interesting if we do get to see all three in one thing. And I think what the ideal situation would have been would have Tom Holland play teen Peter Parker, Andrew Garfield play like college Peter Parker, and then Tobey Maguire play older. But yet somehow they all end up being teenagers in some weird thing.
Yeah.
But who knows, it might be a universe where it's a Benjamin Button universe for Tobey Maguire.
So I loved, we're not going to talk about it, but I loved the Spider-Verse cartoon, and I loved the old fat Spider-Man with his trackies.
Jay Johnson.
I could definitely see...
Oh, Tobey Maguire.
Tobey Maguire coming back as that same Spider-Man he played, but he's aged, so they don't need to de-age him.
Yeah.
I would love that.
That would be cool. There's a lot of people as well saying, like, oh, this was ages ago, so it probably won't happen, especially because, like, No Way Home looks like it is going to be a multiverse situation. But saying, like, how good would Tobey Maguire be as, like, an Uncle Ben?
Like,
it's like a little nod and stuff like that. The thing is as well, I think the way that those three actors look, they are very similar looking. So it does lead its way to like Noah Home, maybe be like a multiverse situation.
Mm.
But also, talking about people who look alike, bloody hell, don't Tony and Peter look like father and son? They've like both got the white and the brown hair that's like quite ginger. Almost similar hairstyles as well. And those moments where they stood next to each other, I was like, I could see the father and son dynamic. And obviously they're going for that.
I wonder if
they dyed RDJ's hair to look even more like Tom Holland's, because it does look brighter in this than other movies.
Really? You noticed that? That's right, okay.
I didn't notice that. Well, especially towards the end, it looks very like close to Ginge.
So I want to talk about Aunt May. The choice to make Aunt May young.
Yeah.
I actually quite like that.
I think it makes sense because, like, sometimes she's just ridiculously old, like, compared to... And it's like, she's an aunt, not a grandma, like...
Yeah, and that does...
They did, in this one, make her slightly more... I don't know if nerdy's the word, but more, like, anti. Like, in...
Yeah.
In Civil War, it's like, damn, okay. Okay, Aunt May. Mm. And then in this, it's like, oh no, she's like, I'm just an aunt, don't worry about me.
So the Aunt May lust thing did make me laugh, particularly the Chinese restaurant guy.
Oh, he gave her free.
Yeah.
He loves you.
And Tony fancies her. And I think, again, they've got the spirit of Aunt May right, a very caring woman who takes in this young boy who doesn't have his parents.
Yeah.
But I think the old lady thing has been done too many times. For me, my aunties, one of them's died, but my aunties were 10 years older and 5 years older than my dad. So there is a bit of an age difference there.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know anyone who's got an aunt that is the same age as their grandma would be.
Yeah.
So it was always an odd thing that Marvel went for that.
Yeah, and I was an uncle at like the age of 2 or 3. My sister was there, an aunt at like... I don't think she was 1 yet. So
it's, right.
I don't know. It definitely speaks to more like modern stuff like that.
And that's probably fair.
It's also as well like comics, especially in the 60s, were very like hyperbolic in a way. Like they had to be extreme and they were all like these spectacle things. And it's like when they've been adapted now, I feel like they've been more grounded in reality and stuff.
Yeah. I did like the, talking about modern stuff, I did like the kind of video diary stuff at the start. That felt like something that's a young person that age would do. And it also gave us some really nice little Easter eggs around the side of Civil War.
It's also like maybe foreshadowing to like, oh, he could be working with a Bugle at some point. He's got a camera thing. He's, you know, maybe wants to sell some stuff. But I mean, Far From Home leads us away from that because
we are doing that next week. Me and him are back and we're doing Far From Home, so we're going to do our best to focus on Homecoming. No promises. We've talked about loads of shit already.
Yeah, but there's more to come.
I do feel like whenever Tony lets me host one of these shows. He knows it's going to be fucking chaotic. And you are another level. You tangent worse than me.
I know.
We're going to focus.
Yeah. That's my superpower. I was bit by a radioactive tangent.
A radioactive tangent. Good.
And then it just went off on one.
You did.
Never stopped.
Another thing at the start that's brilliant and really established very early is the almost fond but mostly frustrated relationship that Happy has with Peter.
Yeah.
And
it's like sometimes, a carer sometimes, like a babysitter.
Not now. Yeah. We've leveled out more recently, but in the early days of our friendship,
that was us.
That was a little bit us, and that did make me think of us.
I do, yeah. Oh no, I won't go. We'll save the talk for more Happy next week. Because I do like he starts the mentor role in this, and we definitely see it coming to fruition in the next movie and stuff. And it is good, and it's good to see that he's going to be in No Way Home as well.
Mm.
Like, Happy's sort of, you know, he was babysitting Tony, and now he's sort of babysitting Peter in a way.
He's not really got a relationship with Peter in the comics.
No.
But I like the fact that they're brave enough to create these relationships and trust that they will work rather than exact adaptations. I think that's necessary.
I think one of the things to point out is the film's biggest influence, and maybe not even necessarily what was contained in these comics, but what came out of it. So Ultimate Spider-Man was a big run. It was like a reboot. To bring in new readers to the Marvel Universe. It was very similar to the MCU in a way. It was like, right, we need to get people, you know, who want to start from ground one. It's been, 40, nearly 50 years of comics. Let's start 2000. Ultimate Spider-Man, this is all you're going to need to read to know Spider-Man. Brian Michael Bendis started it. And it went from 2000 to 2015 and stuff and documented just Spider-Man. But what they did was, they were like, right, we're going to try and cram in all this years of Spider-Man into one. But also, we are realizing this is an adaptation. We're going to change some stuff, we're going to mix some stuff up. And that birthed, like, this freedom for adaptations that it was like, it doesn't need to be the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
like, on DVD extras of this, they've talked about how Ultimate Spider-Man was an influence because of the adaptation side. And same with the Insomniac games. It's like, Ultimate Spider-Man made us realize we can create stories using the comics. The comics don't have to, you know, it's not a page for screen remake. It's like we can read it and go, okay, we could adapt this, we can mix this together and then make our own thing and make it fit our own universe. Because that's what it's got to do. It's got to fit the MCU. If you take it away, it can be difficult. And that's one of the most difficult things with, I think it needs to be applauded more, of bringing Spider-Man into the MCU, because Spider-Man, as much as he's a team player, he's also very much a solo guy. The Sony movies and some of the Sony animated shows have shown Spider-Man could lead a whole universe by himself. He's got enough of a range of characters that he can do that. He's even got other heroes as well as villains and supporting characters that he could make his own universe. He's done it twice with Sony in films and like in Spectacular Spider-Man and all the animated stuff as well.
Yeah.
So it is important that, like, okay, we need to make... We've got Vulture now, but how do we make this the MCU's Vulture and stuff like that? And it also means that, you know, Disney guarantee that if Sony do use that Vulture, it's like, ha, no, people are still going to think of Disney when they see that.
I think it's really peculiar what is Spider-Man and what isn't. There's a very strong argument that we mentioned it earlier, that the Kingpin is a Spider-Man bad guy.
Yeah, Spider-Man Daredevil.
Yeah, he is very much a Daredevil baddie too. Mm. Whereas someone like, say, Electro is very much Spider-Man.
Yeah, of course.
There's these weird crossovers as who's what. Is Galactus a Fantastic Four?
Yeah.
Project?
It's one of them in it where, when it comes to rights, it's like where they debuted and stuff like that. But you get stuff like Norman Osborn, everyone knows Green Goblin, Spider-Man villain. But yet he's had great Avengers stories where he made the, you know, like the bad Avengers and stuff like that. And the evil Avengers and did all that. And he was, you know, he took over, people have seen Rhodey in the suit, but he was, I'm trying to think of what the Iron Man's called now.
Iron Patriot?
Iron Patriot, yeah. He was Iron Patriot for a bit. And that's, you know what, while we're talking about Oscorp, Who bought the Avengers building? Do you think it's Oscorp? Do you think it's the Baxter building, maybe?
I don't think it's going to be either of those. I think it's a red herring.
Do you think? I think it's got to be something, because that building is slap bang in New York, and that is dying for an Oscorp, or at least a Baxter building.
Might have been the Kingpin.
Could be the Kingpin as well, maybe a new hideout or something.
Yeah.
I feel like it's got to be something.
I think it will be someone.
I've been thinking it's someone since 2016. But...
yeah, I think it will be someone, but I don't know. I think perhaps the Fantastic Four buying it is a bit obvious.
Yeah, yeah, but obvious works.
True. I want to talk about the homoeroticism, Fraser. Funnily enough.
In Spider-Man, no way.
Two queer podcasters, and there was a vague homoerotic moment in the film. I do feel like we need to talk about it. And what I like is Aunt May walks in on her nephew in his pants with his best mate. And she's like, just put some clothes on. Yeah. She's not bothered.
Yeah.
If Peter was gay, she gives no shits and it's none of her business.
Yeah.
And that's fucking brilliant.
It is. It's also a weird thing to sort of walk into, even if you're not like, you don't need to be homophobic to just be like, wait, why is he fully clothed and he's got a thing? But like,
that's a fetish, you know. What? That someone keeps all their clothes on, the other one's completely naked. Yeah, it's a special fetish. It's
like
not for me.
I feel like everything's a fetish. Probably the Lego is a fetish, which is...
well, if it exists, there's pornography of it, so yeah.
But yeah, but that Lego scene, I already talked about it from the comics. But it's with Miles.
Yeah.
I do like... I do like Ned Leeds in this, and I like that they went for Ned Leeds rather than like Harry Osborn again. Especially after that Harry Osborn in The Amazing Spider-Man was a bit weird.
Yeah.
It is very weird when Harry's less cool than Peter. Like, well, if they're both equally not cool, it's fine, but like, yeah. It's a weird dynamic.
So what they've done, like we said before with the Vulture, is they've avoided other characters that have been recently in other Sony films. And I think that's important, and it very much differentiates, beyond the fact that Tom Holland looks nothing like the other two, but it does differentiate
that this is
very much the MCU Spider-Man. You might get these characters that you would recognise from the other films, but you ain't gone get them yet.
Yeah, you got to wait. Got to build this universe up first. Which was smart to do so.
Which, once again, just shows the depth of the Spider-Man character bases. I can't think of another character that has so many villains, anywhere near as many villains.
Well, Batman, but like in the Marvel, MCU. Yeah.
But yes, Batman would be the DC equivalent.
We do have to distinguish. We're just talking about Marvel. And I think they were very clear at showing this is the MCU. Like, they had Iron Man and even the small bits. Like, with the Captain America videos... yeah, they're joke little cameo bits.
Yeah.
But they also show, no, this is the MCU, this is not. And even like, so animated stuff, when we go to that, Ultimate Spider-Man, the animated show, when Disney obviously acquired that to differentiate it from like Spectacular Spider-Man, he instantly was with the Avengers, he was with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It was like, no, we're different here. And yeah, I think sometimes it is... like I've seen people say it's a discredit to the Spider-Man character because sometimes he does feel like Iron Boy, or like everything he gets is sort of from Iron Man, like his suit. Dope suit, by the way. Love it. And I love Karen. And I love the way he's still getting things wrong, but he's got Tony to mentor him. So it is a nice, like, we're still getting the Peter Parker character.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm always 50-50 on it. I do like Spider-Man making his own stuff and getting it wrong or having to do it on the cheap. But also, there's a lot of stuff that, like, you can see cooler things if Tony Stark is funding him. The spider wings, different types of webbing, we can see because Tony funds it. Whereas if Peter was self-funded like he has been in other ones, we don't get to see it as much. Maybe if he was working.
They've emphasised that Peter is exceptionally bright with the championship thing where inter-school quiz or whatever the fuck it was. And they've emphasised that in a very different way to his creating the spider fluid in the comics or in...
like, he creates, like, basic ones in this. He creates, like, basic fluids. Obviously, he's got a basic suit. And then Tony Stark takes it to the next level.
Yeah.
But I do like that this is the base of his journey. And we do see that, like, he's just as smart as Tony, because when in Far From Home, when he gets the technology to himself, he can make it as well.
Yeah, so I think it's the right way of saying this is the modern world. It's not the world of the 60s where there weren't these giant corporations that would suck up heroes and make them into a almost corporate type situation. Yeah. That wasn't what the world was like when Spider-Man was created.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been a bit hokey if he'd have done everything by himself when there was all this tech in the world.
Yeah, that's
compared to the time of the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, to be fair. And again, it's just modernizing Spidey. And again, it comes from that Ultimate Comics. Ultimate Comics was doing it in the 2000s. He had him with a mobile phone. Changed a lot of his situations there.
I also want to shout out Interrogation Mode. I popped with the
Batman. Like I was semi-mocking Batman's voice as well.
It was.
It's my voice. It's like, I heard you on the thing. You sound like a girl. I'm not a girl. I'm a boy.
No, I'm a boy.
I'm a man. It
was
good.
It was wonderful. That was a very, very good gag amongst a film that got it right with the tone of the peril, but also this is a school kid that's quite quick and witty, and I felt like they got the tone and the balance between the humour right. Because there was a lot of laugh out loud gags here.
Yeah, and it was one of them where it's like, it's definitely coming in of age like comedy in a way. Like everyone always says, oh yeah, superhero films are all the same. No, they're not. Winter Soldier is like a spy film. This is a coming of age comedy.
Yeah.
It just so happens to be about a superhero. And that's really illustrated in the music. Like, the whole playlist of this is something you'd see in a teen coming of age thing. Like, hey, oh, let's get this some MGMT in there.
Blitzkrieg Bop. Yeah.
And that, I will say, the music, straight from the beginning, I remember weeping when I first saw this. When I heard that they'd done the Spider-Man theme train, but new, literally, in the cinema. I remember sitting down next to everyone at camp, and we were all like, everyone knew I was a huge Spider-Man fan, and just everyone turned to me. Just tears.
You're this is so ridiculous beautiful. Human being.
It was just so good.
The Blitzkrieg Bop montage emphasized something that I thought was actually really important. In a world that, well, at this point, had no J. Jonah Jameson, there was no huge negative press about Spider-Man, so he was actually quite popular sweet.
And it goes back to that neighbourhood thing of, like, that neighbourhood. Hey, yo, you're Spider-Man, you're like our local guy. It also shows how, like, in a universe where there's all these heroes, Spider-Man isn't, you know, needed as much.
Street level?
Yeah, he very much is street level. And it's one of my biggest things I've always loved about Spider-Man is, like, because obviously we both come from the world of wrestling, and Spider-Man helped me a lot with this, especially this version of Spider-Man, because he actually looks like a teenage boy. But, like, I grew up in wrestling where I was, like, I was a teenage boy and everyone else was adults and big. And it was, you know, kind of like, okay. And I was texting, waiting for, am I going to be in the next show? What's going to happen? So a lot of it resonated with me. But then, like, seeing him, like, no, he can still be a hero and be his size or be him. He's different. I'm like, I love that. And also, like, it's him in an adult world. And
yeah, I think
chef's kiss.
I think, again, the coming of age story, the frustration about not being able to get what you want immediately. And also the fact that all young people want to be treated like adults.
Yeah, and almost they feel like they're ready. Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes it is a little bit too early and you need to learn and you need to go through stuff. And maybe even take a little bit of damage mentally to be a grown-up.
Yeah.
And it's an old story.
It's a learning process.
Yeah. It's an old story, but it's done so well in this film. And Tony makes sense.
Tony sums it up at the end anyway. It's like, you screwed the pooch. But I guess it was kind of a lesson in a way. And
yeah, exactly.
And
that.
He even gets offered, you know, you get to be an Avenger. He finally gets everything he wants, but then goes, oh, maybe it should be neighbourhood. And it's like, yeah, until, you know, the world starts to end, and then maybe the neighbourhood things.
Yeah, but they didn't know that.
You can't save the neighbourhood if there is no neighbourhood, as they say in Infinity War. But speaking of the MCU and sort of like timelines and stuff, 8 years later,
I wasn't going to cover the 8 years later thing.
They messed up that, like, literally just say present. Like, Marvel have learnt from this. They will just say present day now, which I'm so grateful but put the year what we're going back to, not the year we're coming to. Oh, I just know.
Doesn't 8 years later completely ruin the timeline?
It does, and the Russo brothers and a lot of, I think even Kevin Feige, you said, ignored the 8 years later ones. But, like, I was really surprised it still hit on Netflix, because, yeah, we watched it on Netflix, Beauty Dub, you still can. All the Spider-Man movies on Netflix, apart from Spider-Man 2, which is very weird. But I think they're going to make their way to Disney.
But they're the only MCU films that aren't on Disney Plus in the UK now.
No.
There's the Hulk one as well.
Yeah,
that's still true. That's true.
That's because of Universal. But yeah, they did edit some stuff in this. I noticed all like those add-on scenes where I was like, they've like, you know, this is definitely the extended version that they put on.
Oh, okay. What did you spot?
Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, there's little things. Where I was like, that's an extra line. It's literally just like an extra line or two, though. It's like, makes no difference. But...
So is that done a lot then in the MCU that you know of? That they just ever so slightly extend them?
In movies, Batman v Superman's the biggest example of having an extended cut. That is very noticeable. And if you see that on a streaming service, they'll probably put the extended cut on.
Okay, okay.
But yeah, just, you know, cinemas need once more time so they can show it a lot and make more money that way. It's just the way it is. And I've got some pretty baller thing. Like I've only got four bullet. I know, I've made notes. For those who listen to the Right in the Childhood podcast.
He never makes notes.
I never make notes, no. And it's the sandwich care about Spider-Man. I've got four pretty big notes, so...
Shall I do my smaller stuff then?
Yeah.
All right, so the moral dilemma with the chase the baddies or swimming with the pretty girl thing.
Oh, right.
Is that one of yours?
I've got this. Okay. So I've put it down as like balancing the two lives because there's that scene, but there's so many others. So there's Liz's party where he's got the choice to go into the party or he's got the choice to save the day. He's got the choice to swim with the pretty girl or go there. He's got the choice to go to prom or to save the date. So we get a rule of three and three. And it's balancing that balance of am I Peter Parker or am I Spider-Man? And in No Way Home, Doctor Strange is literally giving him grief about like, you can't keep living two lives. And it's so cool that it's coming back to the first movie, but he's getting told by a different character. And the scene that perfectly epitomizes this is it's from the comics as well. He's down in the water and it's the half Spider-Man mask, half like Peter face.
Yeah, that metaphor.
It does that all the time in the comics, and especially they do it a lot in Spectacular Spider-Man. You know what? If you want to play a drinking game, every time I mention Spectacular Spider-Man in this, have a go.
Fuck's sake.
But like literally they do that as a symbolism motif from show. But yeah, seeing it there. And then afterwards it comes on the whole thing of I've called it the Come On Spider-Man scene because I think that's what it's called on YouTube. he literally says, "Come on, Spider-Man," where he's like trapped in the thing. And again, that's from the comics. I love how much they literally get panel to screen stuff in there without being too, not tied down by it. But he's literally like, he's down. He's got no one. Tony saved him before in the past. Other people, like Ned has saved him, but now it's down to him. And he's like, he's giving up, he's screaming for help. And that's what a scared teenager would do.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, it's time to buckle down. And he's like, come on, Spider-Man. He's not saying, come on, Peter. He's saying, come on, Spider-Man. And he lifts it up. It's just, it's amazing.
Iconic. Splooged huge amounts of stuff that I'd love to respond to. And it's all going to come out really weird. We are a bit chaotic as a pairing.
Of course.
So the moral dilemma thing is very, very Spider-Man. Of course it goes across most comic books, but I feel like it's a thing that happens so frequently in Spider-Man and so consistently that it was important that it was in this film.
And I think that's why in the MCU they haven't dropped the secret identity. Like, they've dropped secret identities for pretty much every one of their characters apart from Spider-Man because of how important it is for him.
Yeah.
I mean, and then there's Far From Home.
Which we'll talk about in our next episode. The suffocation thing that you were talking about, when you're trapped, when you're down, it is so, so scary. That scene, fascinating for me, it reminded me a lot of some childhood trauma. I understand the fear that Peter feels because as a kid I fell down a manhole and I was trapped in this horrible fucking, I don't even know what it was now. All I remember is the fear and that my mum couldn't get me out and she was petrified and my brother was crying. And you always seem to remember the shit stuff from when you were a kid. Another memory was, do you remember pylons? Were they a thing when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah, when everyone goes...
When everyone got on top of one person and tried to squish them, and it was really fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Really, really nasty, nasty, kind of dangerous behaviour. Mm. I remember I couldn't breathe, legitimately couldn't breathe under one of those, and I thought I was going to die. And this scene, because The acting was so good. The believable fear, horror, and desperation that Tom Holland gave us. Guy, it brought back childhood trauma for me.
It's also a very good metaphorical. Like, I always feel like sometimes when I feel like overwhelmed by stuff, I will put that scene on just because it's like it's a good metaphor thing that nothing can really bring you down.
Yeah.
It's mad. Have you got more small points to...
I thought that was a small point, but it was one of your big points, obviously.
Yeah, I've just got one.
I do like the slow burn affection thing with Mary Jane, who we find out she's Mary Jane at the end rather than
Michelle. Oh, well, she's not Mary Jane.
She's Michelle Jane.
This is one of the things that annoyed me the most.
Oh, dear. Did it annoy you?
When I first watched it, but... I've grown to love... This MJ is incredible, and I do love her.
Is it Michelle Juliet, then?
No, so it's Michelle Jones. But the thing that always annoyed me was, she's not called Mary Jane. That's not her full name. Her name is Mary Jane Watson. Is she Michelle Jones Watson? Used to irk me.
I don't think so.
But I do love this character, and I've grown to... No, I won't talk about too much about the negativity, but like... So yeah, I was getting too heady with it, and then obviously Zendaya is just an incredible actress and does an incredible version of this MJ.
She does.
And when you've seen Far From Home and when you watch this back, you can sort of see the attraction, not the attraction, but like the interest there. That's slowly brewing.
But that's what I liked about it, because obviously we've watched this again together to record this episode, and it felt that the slow burn was so delicately done.
Little details and like they're hanging around each other, neither one's like too cool for one another.
It was kind of obvious, but really, really lovely. Yeah.
And it was good that they knew what they were going for, and
seeing
their relationship develop from what we see now, knowing what happens in Far From Home, then seeing it in Far From Home, and then just seeing the stuff in the trailers for No Way Home is so cute. I just.
And still, we're going to carry on with relationships, I think, because I feel like Liz is an incredibly important character.
Yeah.
Because she is a strong female lead who treats
Never
Peter...
Never the damsel in distress. No. Nope. She understands where he's coming from. And
she's really decent with Peter. She is patient and tries to understand him.
Yeah.
And I think she's an incredibly... important character because of the way she accepts that Peter is who he is, decides that he's not for her.
Yeah.
She doesn't go crazy. She's not a horrible stereotype of a woman going,
because I feel like a lot of what happens with older Spider-Man comics and adaptations is like, he's not there. Oh, dump it. Oh, you're terrible. And he just loses all these girls and he's got a thing. But with recent modern adaptations, like Ultimate Spider-Man in the comics was pretty good of it. Spectacular Spider-Man was really good of it, especially because, funny enough, they had Peter Parker and Liz Allen together.
Right.
And Liz Allen is that was so understanding about Peter not being there because he had the job at the Bugle. Mm. He was Spider-Man and about, but the Bugle was a good cover. But the thing that got her was that he was interested in Gwen Stacy, not. And in this, it wasn't the thing that separated him. Wasn't that he kept. You know, not doing these choices, she understood him. It was, she actually had to go away and because of her dad. Yeah. Now that.
Yeah.
Making Liz Allen an agent teams, that was so clever. And again, it happens because we're free to do whatever we want. It's an adaptation. But that reveal when he knocks on the door, because the music as well, it's perfect. It's a perfect way to construct a scene. The music's all upbeat. He's dead happy to see Liz. He's finally, you know, he's took away the responsibilities of Spider-Man. He's choosing to be Peter Parker. He's seen this girl he really likes. Knocks on the door. The music's upbeat. And then it stops. And we just get Adrian Toomes, who doesn't quite know yet who he is. They even jokes about like him getting his name wrong and stuff like that. And, oh, yeah, that is an iconic scene in the MCU. Just that dead stop.
Mm. So I talked about how the MJ thing was a slow burn that was kind of obvious. This drop was like, oh,
out of nowhere.
Fuck.
Yeah. It's so good. And then when they're in the car together and the cogs great are scene. Slowly turning, Vulture's slowly great working scene. Out who he is. Oh, and the lighting as well in the car when he's like, oh, Liz, I'm just going to give him the dad talk. And he's talking. Michael Keaton's an incredible actor. I can see why he was Batman for the intimidation thing, but as a villain as well.
Yeah.
He's just there like... The thing is, his character's so respectful as well because he has no issues with Peter Parker. His issue is with Tony Stark.
Yeah.
And he's trying to teach. He's like, Peter, I don't want to do anything.
Just
to you.
Stay away.
Just stay away.
Yeah.
These guys are the bad guys, the Tony Starks. But like, he's still got the I'll kill you threat. And he's like, it is almost like he's having two conversations. Like he's having a conversation with Peter Parker and he's having a conversation with Spider-Man, saying Spider-Man. Yeah. Oh, it's just perfect to show the duality.
I do feel that you're right that the Michael Keaton casting was superb. Mm. And if you'd asked me who should play Adrian Toomes, I'd have probably gone for Richard O'Brien. Because he's got the right look.
Yeah, the ridiculously old. Yeah,
old, and he looks like the Vulture in the comic books. But that would have been far too camp.
No,
this is why fan casting is a stupid idea. It's all about appearance.
On occasion. Sometimes it's like acting like... There are people who say that like Willem Dafoe would make a good Joker, and that's basically off his Green Goblin thing. Or like Mark Hamill would be a great Doc Ock.
Yes.
Like that I can see. I do want to see more Adrian Toomes, and obviously he's been alluded to in the Morbius trailer randomly. But hey, they can do that because that's the rules of Sony and Fingy. Any characters they introduce in their Sony stuff they can do.
When the fuck are we getting Morbius? Because we should have
delayed. I think it was supposed to be January. It might still be January 2022. Right. I remember it was coming out on my birthday at one point. I was like,
cool. Because I was looking forward to that. And now my enthusiasm's kind of dampened because I've been waiting too long.
But I think once they get the campaign running again, like they dropped one trailer, I think once they have to get like Venom and Spider-Man and all that out of the way. And I think
we'll see.
I think it will come back. But it's quite exciting that they're going to set up possibly a Sinister Six, either in this universe or like in No Way Home. It looks like they're doing a Sinister Six and everyone's like, oh, what's it going to be? Is it? And what I would really like is we've got three Spider-Man universes. It would be cool if we got two villains from each. Like,
okay.
Seems like we've got Willem Dafoe's like Green Goblin and Doc Ock in there. Like them two would be cool from Sam Raimi's. Electro and I want to say Lizard maybe from Andrew Garfield's. And then two from, I mean, we could get Mysterio or Vulture or like Vulture and Scorpion. Like, honestly, two from each would be great. But then, of course, there's rumours that Sandman's going to be around. But maybe Sandman will turn good. Who knows? But he's just got such a great rogues gallery of villains. And each like franchise has managed to set up different ones in different ways. And
So in the post-credit scene of this, he's not the Scorpion yet. He's a guy who is clearly going to be the Scorpion. Yeah. He's got the Scorpion on his neck. He's an evil man.
Matt Skargen is like, we see him literally in the thing and he's like, I think they use the alias of Scorpion because he's just into scorpions. Like,
yeah.
And he's like, you know, it's the names for the Spider-Man villains are very easy to get. Like Rhino is always an easy one. They just put him in a Rhino suit. He's a big dude. Like, it makes him a Scorpion. He's got a Scorpion tattoo. We'll put him in a Scorpion outfit. Like, it's very easy to do. And, the post-credit scene was really good because, again, it shows Adrian Toomes' character of, like, he still wants to look out for Peter Parker, but he doesn't like Spider-Man.
Yes.
Like, he's like, if I knew who it was, he'd be dead by now. And, like, yeah.
So, yeah, that was a really fascinating thing that why has the Vulture chose to retain Peter's secret identity when he could be super, super...
Dicky.
Well, I was going to say revengey, but yes, Dicky too.
Dicky too. But no, I think what will be interesting is if we see maybe the Sinister Six they're setting up in Sony. So like Vulture, Scorpion, we might get Tinkerer back, Shocker might come back. Maybe that's going to be focused on Morbius and Venom and less Spider-Man. Maybe. So that could maybe they go that twist and then we could get... That is the cool and crazy thing about this is we could get two different Sinister Six in two different universes in the Venomverse and in the like, it's so cool. And let alone the animated stuff. This is why everyone always bangs on that. Why don't Sony just sell Spider-Man to Disney? No, thank you. Because do you know how many Spider-Man films or like Spider-Man based films we're getting in a year this year?
Four?
Well, in 2021 we got Venom and Spider-Man No Way Home, and then like then we'll get Morbius and all that.
Yeah,
but there's other years where we've had him into the Spider-Verse. We're getting so many. Do you know how many they'd get if it was just Disney? We might be lucky to get like one every 2 years or something.
Yeah,
but this we get the Venomverse, we get Into the Spider-Verse, we get him with Disney as well. It's the perfect blend of both worlds. And I just love it all.
So I think we're nearly done, but I want to say very briefly, very, very cool fight scene at the end. It had me gripped. Yeah. But the best thing about the damn fight scene was the line, "How do you think your buddy Stark paid for that tower?"
Yeah.
And it feels to me, as someone who is very much a left winger, that this is the real truth here, is that the Vulture isn't actually that evil.
No.
He's a working class man who took an opportunity and became what he hates.
Yeah.
And that really,
and he gets
really
punished it for it, which is like, And I think this goes to show, one of Marvel's biggest critics for the MCU in Phase 1 and Phase 2 was that their villains were basically the good guy, but different. Like, Ant-Man had Yellow Jacket.
Yeah.
Iron Man had the Iron Whiplash. Man and Whiplash.
Yeah.
And, like, it, you know, there was a fair credit to even Black Panther and
Killmonger.
In Phase 3. But I will say the Phase 3 villains, including Killmonger, they weren't necessarily bad people or anything. They had the right ideology. They just went about it the wrong way. Yeah. And it's the same thing here with Vulture. Not bad people, bad choices.
But what I feel like that line in particular emphasizes is the huge debate on how can we ever win? As left wingers with no power and no money, we have already lost. So you can't fight, or at least what Toombs is suggesting is that we can't fight clean because the right and the rich have already fought dirty and there is no clean left. And it does scare me how much that kind of makes sense. I always kind of brush away the idea of eat the rich. Yeah. And a lot of my friends say eat the rich. I think you do sometimes.
Well, jokingly, yeah.
Yeah, but
I never actually mean it. I mean,
but yeah, the concept of eat the rich, that's put really crudely, but how do you think your buddy Stark paid for that tower?
Yeah,
it really made me think.
And there's a lot on war as well, wasn't it? Like, there's literally the amount of casualties, and it just highlights again how Tony Stark made most of the villains in the MCU because of what he did. Like, even the villains that turned into good guys, like Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, they turned because of Tony Stark.
Yeah.
They didn't want to be him. But then they turn into good guys because of people like Hawkeye. And Hawkeye's not exactly like a rich dude. He's trying to,
He
is literally the Robin Hood of it. Like,
but I feel like it's an easy thing to miss the darkness of the social commentary because it's during this
epic
fight scene. But the social commentary of the MCU, ever since this, I would say, has been pretty brutal. Like the stuff in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we discussed that on our guest episode of that. Yeah. It's quite brave.
Don't pull its punches.
No, and it did make me take a moment to think about, fuck, we've lost. We have actually lost. We have to become like the people we hate to have a chance of getting what we want.
Yeah.
And that is bleak as fuck, and it's in inverted commas, a kid's film, a Spider-Man film. Yeah. And that's important, I think.
We'll find a way to win one day, I'm sure.
No, we won't, Fraser.
Yeah.
I gave up.
Live your life. Enjoy it. Don't matter about what other people are doing.
That's how I see it, is
It's funny that you were team Iron Man for Civil War, but I guess that's a different argument.
Oh, you see, that's not left or right wing, that's chaos or lawful. And I've always been very lawful, whereas you're quite chaotic. Anyway, we're not sides.
That's hard to be chaotic.
And also, it was like, where, Bucky? Was basically Cap's argument.
I know, I meant in the comics as well, but like, yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, it's also like, having to sign like a register or a thing, especially for people who are like, oh yeah, let's sign up for the murderers who have murdered and done all this bad stuff and this stuff that has already proved it can be corrupted. Yeah, let's sign ourselves to that.
Whatever.
That sounds great.
What's the alternative? Utter fucking anarchy and chaos.
No, people like having free will and deciding to choose.
You can have free will.
No, you can't.
Oh, let's not. We're not doing the Civil War debate. We're not doing it.
That's another podcast.
It is. I want to just say that the ending's done really, really well. It sometimes your low-key ending after the big fight scene can be like, oh, I want to go home now. Lord of the Rings, for example, that has four fucking endings. And by the time, you know, you haven't weed for 3 hours, it's like, I don't want to know what happened just to this obscure fucking character.
Just get over it.
This was done not too quickly, but quite concisely.
It
and
tied
then,
a bow on everyone's little story.
And then Aunt May, what the... brilliant.
Out. It was perfect. I do like as well how Vulture was his own downfall. Like, he... his arrogance and stuff like that. He's like, no, I've got to do it. And he explodes. But then Peter still tries to save him.
Yeah.
Like, again, it shows that Spider-Man thing of... Everyone always goes like, oh, Batman and Spider-Man never kill. There's a lot of evidence to show that Batman does kill. But Spider-Man does his very best to try and save everyone, including the people he's battling against.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's that thing of like... It's that lefty spirit. It's like, got to try and save everyone, even if they're bad. And
Yeah, I think so. There you go.
Be like Spidey.
So, Fraser, where can people find you on the internet? What do you want to plug?
I'm on Instagram, SpiderPan Insta. I am on Twitter, but I don't really use it. It's at SpiderPan Tweets.
Right. You're also on an amazing podcast.
I am, yeah. It's a Right in the Childhood podcast.
Right in the Childhood podcast. Tell the listeners about the Right in the Childhood podcast.
I really wish there was another podcast I was on so I could joke and be on that. Yeah, like I said at the beginning, it's a podcast that... myself and Mark do. Kids Telly from three potentially different generations.
Mm.
You might be in one of those generations.
At RITC Pod on Twitter, that.
Yeah. So when you said, do I have anything to plug, do you mean?
I was basically trying to not plug that show.
Do we have anything to plug?
I'm going to plug other stuff. So I was hoping that it would balance rather than me talking for a quarter of an hour about my podcasts, but failed because you're contrary.
Yeah, contrary.
You are contrary.
Thank you.
Yeah. The other podcasts I'm focusing on at the moment, I've got lots, but I'll tell you about the two that I'm focusing on at the moment. One of them is Chucky Vision. We are working our way through all the Chucky films and the Chucky TV series, which is nearly finished by the time this airs. That's my friend Dev and I, and we both bloody love Chucky, and we love talking about Chucky. And so we do, and that's on a podcast called Chucky Vision, because who doesn't want a Chuckle Brothers pun? At Chucky Vision on Twitter. I'm also still around on the Red Dwarf podcast on the We Made This Podcast Network. That is Shipwrecked and Comatose. We are working our way through the final months of the year with some specials that are covering obscurities in the Red Dwarf fandom. But we've covered series 1-5 already, and early next year we'll be looking at series 6, which is, in my opinion, the best series of that there Red Dwarf. That's Shipwrecked and Comatose, if you're looking for it on your podcast provider of choice, or at Red Dwarf Pod on Twitter. So, thank you for joining us for another episode of Podcast 616. And remember that we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to us and give us a rating and review on Apple if that is your provider of choice. If you want to help out the network, you can. Please consider supporting us on Patreon, and you can go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis if you'd like to do that. You do get some exclusive stuff if you support us there. The MCU is not all that we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in a moment. We'll see you next time on Podcast 616. And I tell you what, spoilers, it's me and him again. We're going to be looking... What are we going to be looking at, Fraser?
We're going to be Far From Home, looking at that.
We are. More Spider-Man stuff
more
from us.
More Spider-Man. Love to see it.
So, yeah. Until then, remember, with great power comes...
great responsibility.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
The TARDIS crew.
But the 11th hour is just something about... the way he comes in immediately and just steals everything away from Tennant, fish fingers and custard and booze. And yes. Then you get that ending scene where he's walking through the hologram images, and he deserves that at this point.
Absolutely. I think the 11th Doctor is a masterclass introducing the new Doctor. I don't think any story has ever really topped that for introductions.
The Giddy Carousel of Pop.
I went to the San Remo Pop Festival on a plane. That's a smash hits memory for you. On a plane with Frankie Goes to Hollywood, we had Frankie, all of Spandau Ballet, all of Duran Duran, Sade, Chaka Khan, Bronski Beat, and Talk Talk, all on the same aircraft. I remember thinking, if this old barge goes down, then A, what's the insurance? And B, you know, the Cocteau Twins will probably have a hit next week because sort of the whole thing will be cleared out.
Right in the childhood.
It's a documentary.
Oh, get in the bin.
So this was...
Oh, okay, right. We talked about Prejudice, but documentaries, maybe that is the...
So it was a Halloween thing where they had a lot of very famous TV presenters from the time presenting from the most haunted house in Britain.
And, yeah, this...
It was massively controversial at the time, and it was either you thought it was amazing, yeah, and you know it was critically
like
well received. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mate, ish.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
Hi, I'm Fraser Summers.
And I'm Mark Adams.
We're here to talk to you about one of the most valuable traits a student or soldier can have.
Patience.
Sometimes patience is the key to victory.
Sometimes it leads to very little, and it seems like it's not worth it, and you wonder why you waited so long for something so disappointing.
How many more are these?